calling it Black Friday.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thank you for joining us as we continue with Fallout, our coverage of the financial crisis. And I wish I had better news for you this morning, but the term Black Friday is actually being thrown around, and it's not hard to see why. It's early, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average is already down 3.1% to 8,312. The NASDAQ down 0.75% to 1633. And the S&P 500 down 2.75% to 885. Overseas markets are looking dismal as well. Tokyo's Nikkei Index dropped 9.75%. Germany's DAX and London's FTSE have both plunged more than 9%. It is shaping up to be another rough day at the New York Stock Exchange. Ted Weisberg is the president of Seaport Securities. He's been a trader on the floor of the exchange for 40 years.
It's like standing in the middle of a hurricane, you know, with no place to hide.
But Weisberg says it might not be as bad as it seems.
The prices here on some of these stocks, they're giving back the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They're pricing in an awful lot of bad news, and my suspicion is the news is not quite as bad as the current prices of a lot of these stocks are indicating.
Let's hope. Ironically enough, yesterday marked the one-year anniversary of the Dow's highest close ever, 14,164. The Dow has fallen about 40% since then. That in spite of the hundreds of billions of dollars governments around the world have poured into the markets. Thought we'd run all this by economist Andrew Hilton. Andrew, markets are crashing in spite of massive action from governments.
Well, possibly because of the action from the government. Unfortunately, by standing in front of the markets and saying the sky is falling and you must sign up for this or the end of the world will come, I think governments around the world have actually increased the sense of panic rather than reduced it.
Do you think it would have been better for the markets if the government had let some of these big banks fail?
Well, I think it learned its lesson with Lehman Brothers. I don't think it intended to let Lehman Brothers go. And when it did let Lehman Brothers go, it discovered just how complicated a bank like Lehman is. And I think after that, the government took a deep breath and said, we're not going to do that again.
If we're looking at the long-term effects of all of this government action, one concern that I've heard expressed is inflation. Is that something that we should worry about?
Yeah, I think we should worry about it, but it is a second-order concern. What's happened in economic terms is that money simply isn't circulating in the economy, and the government has compensated for that by pouring huge amounts of liquidity into the market. If indeed activity started to pick up, then we would have huge amounts of liquidity sloshing around, and we would undoubtedly have much higher inflation than we have now. But God, inflation looks like the solution, not the problem, just at the moment.
Andrew Hilton is the director of the Center for the Study of Financial Innovation. Andrew, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, October 10th at marketplace.org. Boeing and its striking machinists are back at the bargaining table. The machinists have been on the picket line for over a month now. Neither side has changed its position substantially, but as Jeff Tyler reports, the financial meltdown has forced them to try to work out their differences.
Back in early September, Boeing and the International Association of Machinists were willing to go to the mat over the issue of outsourcing. But that was then.
This is a strike with a profitable company and a strong union. All of a sudden, it has a different dimension because of the collapse in financial markets and the global impact.
That's University of California, Berkeley professor Harley Shaken.
For workers, it makes them apprehensive on the picket line.
As for union leadership,
they want to see a settlement before the economic position of the company erodes.
Shaken says Boeing wants to end the strike before customers cancel orders. American Airlines has signaled that the strike could force it to postpone its plan to upgrade with new Boeing planes. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Finance ministers from the Group of Seven industrialized nations gather in Washington today to discuss the global economic meltdown. Later this weekend, they'll attend meetings for the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Help for developing nations will top the agenda. But do wealthy countries have the money to rescue the world's financial system and help developing nations? Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
The IMF says rising food and energy prices are taking a heavy toll on some developing nations. They're using more of their foreign reserves to buy staples. They can go to the IMF for a loan, but it will need money from wealthy nations to make those loans. MIT economics professor Simon Johnson says rich countries should be willing to help to avoid future crises.
You have to spend a little bit of money now in order to avoid having to spend a lot more money later.
But G7 members are mired in the financial crisis. Moyara Rusin is an economist at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. She says there's only one solution.
We do definitely need to bring Russia and China to the table. This is no longer a G7 conversation. We need to make it a G9 conversation.
Both Rusin and Johnson say the IMF will be able to rally wealthy nations to help the developing world, despite critics who say it's losing its clout. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
President Bush is slated to speak later this morning, but there's already word of more government intervention in the economy today. Jeremy Hobson explains.
The government is reportedly weighing a plan to insure all of the nation's bank deposits. Up until the bailout plan passed Congress last week, depositors were insured for up to $100,000. Lawmakers raised that limit to $250,000. Now, amidst all the market turmoil, Washington is considering removing the limits altogether. Christopher Whalen, Managing Director of Institutional Risk Analytics, says it's about time.
You know, it's about confidence right now, and unfortunately, that's a very difficult thing to regain once it's lost. So the powers that be are trying to figure out what formula they need to put in place to regain that confidence.
The idea is aimed at keeping individuals from pulling money out of their bank accounts and thereby weakening bank balance sheets even further. The move is currently only in discussion stages. A White House spokesman tells Marketplace the administration is reviewing its options, but declined to comment on, quote, market-sensitive policies. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
10 days ago, our New York bureau chief, Amy Scott, hit the road to help us find out whether Wall Street has set this country on the road to ruin. Amy traveled hundreds of miles and talked to scores of people. We conclude our series today and get Amy's final reflections.
As I made my way across the eastern half of the country, I saw many ways, large and small, that people are feeling this financial crisis. There was the 60-year-old executive assistant in Pittsburgh. She may have to work another 10 years because she can no longer afford to retire. The car dealer in Cincinnati, who may have to close down because his customers can't get loans. And Steve Mawson, a hotel bellman here in St. Louis.
My tips are about two-thirds of what they were a month ago. So I thought to myself, gee, this may be a real good barometer of what's happening out there in the general economy.
I found Mawson after hearing a voice on the hotel doorman's two-way radio talking about yesterday's stock market dive. I traced the voice to the slender 67-year-old who, when he's not delivering luggage, is following the gyrations on Wall Street.
I wouldn't like to say it's an addiction of mine, but it's an extreme interest.
All Mawson's money is in a single stock, a biotech company he says is actually holding up.
Two rules. One, never take the hearsay of another. Rule two, never put all your eggs in one basket. I broke both rules years ago on this one, and I fell in love with the little company, and I stayed with it, and it's done me very well. But I look at my mother, I look at others, and I see the pain they're going through.
I've seen some of that pain on this road trip, but I've also met plenty of people who are doing just fine. They've invested their money wisely, or they're just getting by on less. If I could take away one message from this trip, it's the sense that even if the economy gets a lot worse, most people I talk to truly believe it'll bounce back. In St. Louis, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
To hear more of Amy's trip, go to our website, marketplace.org, and click on Road to Ruin. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Don't look at your 401k and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.